It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, welcome back to Money for Lunch. It's a splendid Tuesday. I'm just excited because, I don't know, it's just a great time to be alive. You know, we have all these changes with technology. In a lot of ways, business today is much easier than it was just even a few years ago, but definitely much easier than it was 10 years ago. To be able to get the word out about your brand or your cause or your message is absolutely easier, right? I mean, there's just so many ways. What is especially interesting to me is we have all become media outlets. Each of our businesses can function as a transmitter of our own message, of our brand. And, you know, it just makes life easier. We no longer have to be dependent on somebody else. And interestingly enough, we have Peter Friedman. He's going to be on the show talking about, social content marketing. Also on the show, we have marketing legend Jonathan Cronstedt. He's going to be talking about marketing as well. So far we have an absolutely legendary show. And if speaking of legendary, you're going to love this. My third guest today is Michael Gerber. Michael Gerber, you might have heard of him. He created this small little sensational book called The E-Myth, and he is on the show today talking about some of the mistakes that a lot of companies make. And the E-Myth is a book that revolutionized the way I did business and the way I taught my clients how to do business. If you do not have The E-Myth, I would strongly suggest you get it. Kenneth Rogers on the show talking about your legal rights. And then Neil Patel, he's going to be talking about Google Plus. Is it something that you need to be, should it be part of your media mix? So overall, we have this outstanding show, and I'm excited, and I think that anybody listening today will really be able to up their game, if you will, at least on the marketing side. We have a lot of marketing experts and a lot of social media experts on the show today. So let's get the party started. My first guest, Peter Friedman. Peter Friedman is the chairman and CEO of Live World, a social content marketing company managing social media for the Fortune 500 companies through engagement, moderation, and insight. Peter is a social media visionary and veteran with 29 years experience in the space, 17 of them at Live World, Inc., and 12 at Apple. He provided multiple global brands with strategic social media guidance and delivered hundreds of social media programs in multiple countries and languages. Peter Friedman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. All right, so I'm excited to have you here. I mean, it's hard to imagine that you've been doing this for almost 30 years. That in itself is kind of unique.
I know. We were a little ahead of our time. And I was recently at, just a couple of years ago, Steve Case, who started AOL, and we were all in this, in the early days together, had a party for the 25th anniversary of AOL that he called the Pioneers Party for social media. And I was invited, so I guess that makes me a pioneer. And he said, it's all very popular now, but you remember 25 years ago, which now would be like 28 or whatever, everybody thought we were nuts, including his parents. So that's true.
Right.
They all thought we were crazy. It's a lot more popular now than it was then.
Sure, sure. But you know what? What's the old saying? Pioneers get slaughtered and what do you call it? Settlers are the ones who who reap the rewards are the pioneers. I mean, that's what happens in all new worlds, right? The pioneers come in, they do a lot of the heavy lifting, people laugh at them, and then the settlers come in and reap some of that reward.
Well, it can be quite true. I remember I was a senior executive at Apple. I was doing this at Apple, and I was standing there in the big executive meeting, and I was pointing at the slides and saying, one day, this is going to be bigger than the personal computers. It's going to be phones and TVs. Everybody's going to do everything through it. And it was like I heard this weird noise. I turned around, and they were literally laughing with their hands over their mouth. They're not laughing now. And we're unusual. We've been around a long time. So we were at Apple doing this, and we started the company in 1996. And it was really online community websites. We didn't have broad social networks then, although you could consider AOL then. And we've survived a long time. 800 out of 1,000 Internet companies went out of business in the 2001 crash. And really, we're the only social media online community firm today that was alive and established in 1999. Everybody else either went out of business, got bought, and faded away, or they were small then. Unless we want to count AOL, but that was a little different. That was kind of a portal that was online community dominated. So we've been very good at surviving. I think that's because, in line with your theories, we're very good at managing our emotions. we tunnel them where we need to go. But everybody else, it gets hard, they go away, or they do very well and they go away. And we just, stuck it out. And now it's good. It's growing. It's profitable. We have big clients. We're having a lot of impact. So we like that.
Well, let's talk about this. Walk me through this, especially for our listeners, because to me there seems to be so much confusion and overwhelm out there, information overload about social media and social content and blah, 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 social this. So let's break it down. What is social content marketing?
Okay, so you make a really good point. There's so many companies doing so many things in such a growing, expanding marketplace that the noise alone is overwhelming. And many companies are, they're venture-backed, they've got millions of dollars, lots of sales and marketing, maybe more of that than revenue. And if you're somebody in a business who's trying to figure out what to do, it's overwhelming. Here's what it really comes down to. It really comes down to relationship marketing or support. It's as old as sales and marketing, where people, by talking to each other, establish relationships. On the basis of those relationships, they create value, in this case, doing business with each other. You can go all the way back to the Roman and Greek forums or medieval marketplaces where these social venues were created so people would talk to each other. That would draw commerce and create taxes for the government. Or, last century and a half, general stores that had chairs around them. So it's just about getting your customers to talk to each other and to bring you along so you establish a relationship and you can really build a business off of that.
Well, okay, so walk me through here. Here I am. I'm a startup, and I'm not, we'd call it that savvy as far as using social media. So how would you get a novice or a newbie to go to start engaging its audience and start driving sales from, quote, having a conversation with Facebook or Twitter or whatever they choose?
Well, first, just for clarity, our client base are all Fortune 500 companies, really big brands, Walmart, Procter & Gamble, Pfizer. But whether you're a top 10 company in the world or you're just a store down the street, it matters. And the way you get started is you sit down and you think about what you're trying to accomplish. You don't just put up a Facebook page. You say, what do I want to do? Most businesses, they want more sales, but sometimes it's something else. Say, okay, I want more sales, or maybe I need, do better customer support or something. So that's my goal. How am I going to do it? Then you have to think about what kind of a brand, again, small company, big company, you are, and what kind of experience you want. If you were a small store or a restaurant, you'd be thinking about, when they walk in here, I want them to have this sensibility. I want the decorations to be like this and the food to be like that or the countertop to be this way. Or if you're a big, giant brand, you say, gee, if they're coming into my Walmart store, I want it to be like this. Or they're buying my chapstick, I want them to think about this. So think about that and lay it out. Write it down. These are my goals. This is the sensibility of my brand. We like to call it an online party. What kind of a party are you going to throw for your customers online? What's the feel of it going to be? That's the cultural model. Write that down. Because, you know, if you're business to business, maybe it's, you know, a weekend seminar, you know, like an offsite or something. If you're Zoetis, which is a big drug company for animals, and their customers are ranchers and horse breeders and things, their party's more like a barbecue at a county fair. If you're a Cosmopolitan magazine and you're focused on 24-year-old women coming of age, it's a hot party with hot drinks and hot gossip. These are all live examples of work we've done, by the way. So you want to think about that experience you're going to create. It's not just a place to put ads. It's a place to create an experience where your customers can come together, talk with you, talk with each other, and feel what you're like, because their sense of how you behave with them on Facebook or Twitter is how they're going to think your products and services are. So it's very important that you just don't put up a Facebook page, that you think about what you want to accomplish and what that sort of emotional and dialogue sensibility will be among and with your customers. That's how you get started.
I love it. So it's really not about hurry up and sell me something. It's really about slow down, get to know me. You're throwing on, like you said, you're throwing on this party. You're throwing on this social event. And it's not about, you know, again, selling something, because you wouldn't show up at a party and say, hey, Peter, you know, buy this. You know,
exactly.
You wouldn't do that at a party. You would say, hey, what's going on? You're going to try to build rapport, and we're trying to make a connection there to see if there's anything to go on just beyond this party.
That's exactly right. And, you know, a lot of our customers, these big brands, they've been doing all this marketing for decades. You know, in the history of business, is going to say the sales and marketing for thousands of years was about relationships and people talking to each other. And it's only after World War II, to the turn of the century, you got this odd mass marketing piece of business. But the Internet brought back the core. So you want to think of it as a party. Now, most of our big clients, having spent 50, 60 years mass marketing, one-way broadcast messages, they get onto Facebook, Twitter, and all they want to do is talk about the products of the brands. And we go, no, think of it like a party. If you went to a party and what happened is the host stood up and spent the next 3 hours talking about himself, one, you'd get bored, two, you'd get offended, three, you'd leave, and four, you'd never come back, and you would tell people don't go back. But if you came to a party and the host talked a little, but mostly had interesting topics for everybody, and there were a lot of other interesting people to talk to, you go, hey, this is a great party. I had a good time. This is a great host. I want another party with this guy. I'm going to bring my friends. And, oh, by the way, he probably makes good products or services or stores, too, because he made a good party. I should go buy that. And that's exactly what happens. So you have to think of it as a word-of-mouth social venue that you're creating an experience for your customers. And if you do it well, they'll reward you by coming back, bringing their friends, and buying your products.
Hey, guys. Sorry about that. Looks like we just lost Bert. So we're going to break to a commercial real quick, Peter.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll try to get Bert on the line.
He'll
so just
tell me where to pick up again. Okay.
Sure. No problem.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
It's just so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. Had a little technical glitch there. Speaking of technology or whatever, I got out of my own party there. Peter, hey, real quick, I wanted to talk about this. Here you are. You're this company that works with these massive companies, some of the biggest companies in the world, and there's a lot of automation tools out there, but yet you guys do a lot of hands-on human moderation. Why is that? Why are you guys in there versus just using automation? What's going on?
Well, that's a very good question because, you know, we're in the high-tech industry. I came from Apple. We have a lot of technology. We make a lot of technology. I got all these engineers. But social media is a human venue. It's a human media venue, and it's driven by people connecting with each other. What people get out of it is they get a chance to express themselves, to make friends, and get attention. That's the core of it. And even if it's business, you might say they get attention to, you know, display their wares, a business person, to make social, you know, professional network things and get the attention of their boss for doing a good job or something. Those are the core things. And people fundamentally want people connections, and they don't like being managed by algorithms. And you also have to really understand what they're saying in their content and context. All of this requires a human element. You can't rely just on technology. It's not going to get it right. So technology is very good when it's used the right way, but if you rely completely on technology, you're going to lose that human element, or you're going to distance yourself from your customers right at the junction that you need to get closer. So most companies have technology, good technology, but they miss that human element. Or they're like an agency, and they got people, maybe expensive people, but they can't scale it. So what LiveWorld's done that's very unique is we maintain a human touch, a human layer, and we build technology not to replace those humans, but to make them faster, better, more cost-effective. So as an example, we today, across all our clients, process over 1 million pieces of user content every month. That's a typical month.
Wow.
You get to Christmas, it's going to be more like 1.5 to 2 million. We have one client, this last Christmas on Black Friday, we went through 62,000 comments in 24 hours, just for one client. That's 42 a minute, past human eyes. And the reason we're able to do that is we built a proprietary technology platform we call the social content marketing system that brings the user content in from thousands of different pages we're managing for our clients, and it puts it in a form factor and with tools our human moderators or engagement specialists or insight specialists can look on it and act on it very, very fast, like really fast, and higher quality. It's all tracked. So this way, we're able to have that human layer, but we're able to scale it, so it makes sense cost-effectively. And I'd like to point out virtually all of our employees doing this are in the United States.
We're out of time, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing fascinating stuff. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about some of the examples that you guys are doing there at LiveWorld and just dig a little bit deeper next time.
That'd be great. And I had a great time.
All right.
And thanks for having me.
You bet. Peter Friedman, thank you so much for stopping by.
Okay, bye.
Guys, all right, guys, we're off and running. We're going to take a little bit of a commercial break, and then Jonathan Cronstedt is going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking a little bit about marketing and right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew. You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Hey, guys, we are back. For whatever reason, I'm having a little bit of a technical glitches today. Hey, Jonathan Cronstedt on the show today. He is the president of DigitalMarketer.com. DigitalMarketer.com is one of those companies that teaches people how to build a business online. Jonathan is one of those guys who's a sought-after expert because he's done this not once, not twice, but three or four times. He's worked with some of the biggest companies out there, and he's here on the show to talk about the five key areas to building a business dynasty. Jonathan Cronstedt, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Great to be with you today. How are you?
Doing great, man. I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you on the show to talk about this because so many people have heard so much junk about, you know, building a business or doing stuff on the internet that they're confused. And some of them, unfortunately, are getting scammed with these, you know, these get-rich type of schemes that are out there. And so I'm excited to have you on the show to hopefully give people some clarity and some focus on what they need to look for. So let's talk about this. What is a lead magnet? Let's talk about these five key areas, starting off with this thing that you call a lead magnet.
Well, essentially, these core philosophies that we call the five things at Digital Marketer, which essentially is the brainchild of Ryan Dice and Perry Belcher, it's going to be the five elements that any online business must have for success. And to give you a brief framework before we dive into all five things, it's designed around the fact that we wholeheartedly believe that in today's economy, it has never, ever, ever been harder to get someone to give you that first dollar. It's never been a more challenged environment or a more distrusted environment than it is today. So getting that first purchase is traditionally the hardest hurdle to get over. But what we're also seeing online today is that once that first hurdle is overcome, it also is one of the best environments to continue to engender more and more transactions. So what we've developed is these five key things: the lead magnet, the tripwire, the core offer, the profit maximizer, and the return path, all designed around giving businesses the easiest path to success online while making sure that we're honoring and, in sync with the current activity and sentiment of the buyers that are online. So that's how we designed it. And if you'd like, we can go ahead and dive into the lead magnet and the philosophy behind it, which is sort of the jumping off point.
Absolutely. Let's talk about this lead magnet thing.
Sure. Well, the lead magnet concept is very, very simple and one that of all of the five things, the majority of your listeners are probably the most familiar with. The lead magnet is simply a highly impactful, very specific piece of free information that is packaged and given out in exchange for contact information. Traditionally, the contact information is going to be an email address. It could also be an email and phone number, but it's really designed to do one thing and one thing only, and that's begin the relationship. And the ancillary purpose is, of course, to, as we move down these five things, the lead magnet gives you the email address, which allows you to move them into a return path, depending on which elements of the choose your own adventure as you move through the five things they take. So the lead magnet, summarized, is the best information that you have to create a positive experience as quickly as possible in order to gain permission to move them down the five things.
Gotcha. You know what, and I like this, and I want to give this example. This is an offline example of what a lead magnet is, guys, because I want to pick up this key thing that you just said, and that is your best information, not your shoddiest information, but I want to, and so using your best information, if you guys can picture going to a mall, if you go to the food court, a lot of the people at the food court are out there with some of their best food, and they're just giving you a free hors d'oeuvre. They're giving you this lead magnet, if you will. And so hopefully you sample this chicken or this whatever, and you go, that's good. I want more, right? Is that a fairly good lead magnet example?
Absolutely. And what it really also gives you is – It gives you the example of how a lead magnet should function online. A lot of people really screw this up, and they end up with a lead magnet that is some giant, grandiose, ego-stroking white paper, when in reality, the food court example that you gave with the appetizer bite is exactly what you're looking for. That is a specific piece of orange chicken from Panda Express, their best seller, their highest volume item, that is the most delicious. And the likelihood that you're going to want more orange chicken because you tried orange chicken is the clearest and easiest response, closely followed by, well, they make good orange chicken, maybe they make other good stuff too. So the second response is going to be, I'd like to try something other than what I just tried. But it's very specific and very actionable. Panda Express does not walk out to you with a buffet push cart and say, try one of all of the things we offer. And
it should
be done in the same fashion.
I love it. Okay, so let's go on to the next thing, which is this thing called a tripwire. What the heck is a tripwire?
Well, the tripwire is really where our process completely changes from everybody else's online. The tripwire is designed to be the lowest possible barrier to entry that moves someone into a purchasing relationship. And off of all of the split testing we've done, we've found that someone that purchases something for any dollar figure does not matter, but someone who purchases something is worth on average 11 times in their lifetime with us as someone who has come in but does not immediately engage into a low price point offering. So,
all right, so are you there? Did you cut out, or did I cut out? All right, so it looks like we're having, for whatever reason, we're having some technical difficulties, and our guest, Jonathan Cronstedt, just dropped on us. Hopefully he'll call back, because I want you guys to get this. This thing called the tripwire is so important, and so here he is. He's back. Jonathan, are you there?
Yeah, Bert, not sure. Some system hung up on me, so here I am.
Well, you know what? I tell you what. You know, sometimes it happens, and so anyway, let's not worry about it. But
I want to recap this real quick.
So this is, and you said it does not matter the dollar amount. So whether it's a dollar or $50 or $5, it doesn't matter. It's just something that engages that. Identifies this person as somebody who trusts you enough to give you their money, and in today's world, we're really talking about giving you their credit card information and saying, hey, Jonathan, I trust you enough that I'm going to give you my credit card information, my most personal information, because I trust you enough, and so I'm going to buy your $7 report or your $27 video series. Is that what the tripwire is?
The tripwire is specifically designed, if we detach price and we detach vehicle of application entirely, think of it as the easiest way to shift the perspective in the mind of the buyer as to what the relationship is. That whether it's a dollar or whether it's 10 or 100, and obviously lower than $20 is really, we would not want to see it go over 20. But the whole goal is to move as many people into the mental state of a buying relationship as possible, because it makes the process of ascending them into the purchase process that much easier. Once they have made the mental shift that it is a micro commitment, psychologically they are now purchasing from you, you will find that every other purchase opportunity comes much easier, much more consistently.
I love it. Okay. Next step, and we're going to, you know what, we're going to probably have to bring you back because we're going to run out of time here. And so the next step is the core offer. And so briefly tell us, we've gone from lead magnet to tripwire. Now we're going to give them a core offer.
Well, if I'm going to have to go soon, I want to give them the most exciting stuff. So let me address core offer and profit maximizer in the same thing, and then we can pick up at a later date. But the core offer is very simply what you're known for. It's your cheeseburger at McDonald's. It is, what are you known for? What is in your wheelhouse? What is the offer that you bring to market most consistently? So that's going to be the most vanilla part of the five things, is it's your standard offer. It's what everybody does that comes to you for whatever they come to you for. The profit maximizer is also, like the tripwire, an area where we have a completely different perspective, and I'll stick with the cheeseburger analogy, that on average, McDonald's, to get a customer to the drive-through, makes about 8 cents when they sell a cheeseburger. That the cheeseburger is going to make them almost no money when it comes down to what it costs them to acquire the attention and interest of someone and get them to the drive-through window to order a cheeseburger. However, when they ask, do you want fries with that, or would you like a large soda, their profit margins go up to almost $1.35 to $1.50 on that person. So literally, if McDonald's was relying on their core offer to make the business work, they'd be out of business. However, because of the profit maximizer, which is essentially designed to be something that allows you to make enough that you can afford to pay more than every competitor in your marketplace to acquire a customer, when you have that as part of your sales process, it completely changes the game and what you can do to give your customers the experience that nobody else can afford to give them. So that's the area that's also very exciting.
Jonathan, we're out of time. Well, what I'd love to do is I'm going to have Amy make arrangements with you to bring you back so we can dive into this a little bit deeper and really hit the profit maximizer return path, which are the next two elements. And I appreciate you stopping by and sharing, and we'll bring you back as soon as your schedule allows.
Sounds good, Bert. Have a good lunch.
All righty. Thanks. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by Jonathan Cronstedt. And what I love about that is you can apply that to whatever business you have, whether it's online or offline. Hey, up next, Michael E. Gerber. Michael E. Gerber has been named, called, if you will, as the number one business guru by Inc. magazine. This guy is the guy who probably revolutionized business and business consulting for millions of people, and his number one selling book, The E-Myth. He is truly a legend in the world of entrepreneurship. He is, like I said, by Inc. magazine calls him the number one small business guru in America. He started, or probably in the world, he started working with business owners more than 40 years ago in order to address a significant need in the small business market. Businesses owned primarily by people with technical skills but few business skills and no place to get a meaningful help. Over the years, Michael E. Gerber companies have helped tens of thousands of small business owners successfully transform their business into world-class operation. Michael is the author of the mega bestseller, The E-Myth, and The E-Myth Revisited, and 13 other books, 13 other business coaching books. Currently, Michael is inviting audiences around the world to come dream with me by experiencing his one-of-a-kind entrepreneurial incubator known as The Dreaming Room, which was born to awaken the entrepreneur within people of all walks of life all around the world. Guys, stay tuned. This is going to be such an exciting segment. Michael E. Gerber, welcome to Money for Lunch. Michael, you there?
Hello. I'm here.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to Money for Lunch. All right. Glad to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Well, that was a mouthful, wasn't it?
It was. But let me tell you, you know, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. You know, I got to meet, you and I met at the Magic Castle. It was, you know, just for a few minutes, but it was a great experience to meet you and your lovely wife there at the Magic Castle. I guess it was about a year ago. But, you know, truly, I am one of those individuals who, when I first read the E-Myth, it immediately transformed my business and the business of my customers because, you know, I really use the E-Myth. And I'm telling you, if you were to see my original copy, it's just tattered and tons of notes on it. And I treasure it to this day, Michael, because it has such an impact on businesses. And I'm excited to have you. You're literally like a legend. And so anyway, I'm not to embarrass you, I'm gushing all over you. But tell the audience who haven't read The E-Myth, what is The E-Myth?
Well, The E-Myth is the entrepreneurial myth. And essentially says that people who go into business aren't who we think they are. They're not really entrepreneurs, but what I've come to call technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. So what they do is they create a job for themselves. So the mechanic starts an auto repair business, the chiropractor or chiropractic practice, the heart surgeon, a medical practice, and on and on and on and on. And every single one of them believe in the fatal assumption that because they know how to do the work of the business, they know how to build a business that does that work. And it's just absolutely not true. And it accounts for the outrageous failure rate of small businesses that has gone on and on and on and on for all the years I've been doing this work. So the E-Myth is that point of view that says go to work on your business rather than going to work in your business, to invent a business that works, and a business that works without you as opposed to simply because of you. So your business stops being dependent upon you, the owner, and becomes dependent instead upon the system that you build that ordinary people can use. And that's the key. That's absolutely key.
I love it. Let me ask you this. With all the experience that you guys have had, with all the teaching that you've done, what's the number one thing that you see these, quote, technicians do that kills their business?
Well, the very, very first thing that every single person I ever speak to who owns a business has to do is they got to stop. They've literally got to stop. They've got to stop in their tracks and stop trying to think about how to fix the business they've got and begin the process all over again by thinking about their business as though it's going to be franchised, as though it's the prototype for a franchise, as though they're going to actually scale it. Now, the minute they begin to think that way, they have to ask themselves, so how would it work? What would it look like? How would it do what it needs to do if I'm not the one doing it? And they'd immediately understand they've got to start anew. So it's starting anew as opposed to fixing old co, as everybody tries to do. Help me fix it, help me fix it, help me fix it, help me fix it. Instead of fixing old co, they have to begin to think about it as though it were new co. In other words, they're going to invent a new business by going to work on it, not in it, by being able to transcend it in order to transform it. And as they begin to see that, it creates a completely new paradigm. And the minute you create that new paradigm, something significant happens. And it's truly remarkable when it happens. And it happens almost immediately when somebody can see that picture.
Yeah, you know what, and I can attest to that. That was my experience. I mean, the light bulb went off, and every chapter another light bulb would go off. Hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about your latest project here. What the heck is the Dreaming Room? Walk me through this.
Well, the Dreaming Room is the incubator, if you will, for that guy we're talking about. So that guy we're talking about is stuck in his business, doing it, busy, doing all the work that has to be done, doing whatever comes up, fixing problems, solving problems, working 12 hours a day and so forth. I'm simply saying stop. And stop to do what? Stop to join me in the Dreaming Room. And the Dreaming Room is an entrepreneurial incubator. It's what you do before you write a business plan. It's what you do, in fact, to be able to step back from what you do, step back from how you do it, and to see it anew. So the Dreaming Room is what I call a blank piece of paper in beginner's mind. Now, literally, it's a 12-week process. 12-week process done online, done through GoToMeeting, led by one of my master Dreaming Room facilitators, who takes the participants step by step through a process to discover what I call their dream, their vision, their purpose, and their mission. In short, it enables them to see their life and their business in a completely new way than they've ever seen it before. It's the most spectacular experience anybody has ever had.
I love it. You know what? And I like the fact that you say do this before you create your business plan, because if I could just see a bunch of people, a bunch of entrepreneurs if you said, hey, put together a business plan, they wouldn't know where to start. They wouldn't know, you know, they couldn't put together a business plan if their life depended on it. Because if by going to the dreaming room, they're going to get that, they're going to get the information they need, so they're so laser focused on what their business is about that they could tell you their business plan in their sleep. What a huge difference.
It's absolutely incredible difference. It's like when you think about what great entrepreneurs possess that everybody else doesn't. I call it the Jobs effect after Steve Jobs. And it wasn't that Steve Jobs was a great planner. It was that Steve Jobs was a great visionary. And that visionary had a dream. And he pursued that dream with every bit of his soul and love and passion than anybody else on the face of this earth could imagine. Steve Jobs said it himself. He said, you've got to love this thing. And without that love, without that passion, without that vision, without that dream, you're not going to have enough energy to sustain yourself in doing the hard work that's necessary to truly invent an extraordinary company. That's what he did. But understand, that's what every great entrepreneur does. That's what the founder of Starbucks did. That's what the founder of Microsoft did. That's what the founder of Walmart did. And they're no different from any small business owner. They're simply a small business owner who had a dream, who had a vision, who had a purpose, and who had a mission, and were clear, and compelled emotionally, spiritually, physically, to see their way through to get it done. That's what the dream is all about. That's why I invented it.
I love it. Hey, Michael, we're out of time. And I'd love to bring you back and talk more about the Dreaming Room. And also, I'd love to bring you back and talk about your new, your next bestseller, which is, I understand, is called The Awakening, the Entrepreneur Within. I would love to have you back and talk about that book as well.
Love to do it. Let's do it.
All right. Michael Gerber, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
My delight. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Guys, great stuff there by Michael E. Gerber. I guarantee you, if you put that into practice, it will revolutionize your business just like that. It did it for mine. It's done it for countless of my clients. I take his book, and then I show my clients step-by-step how to implement it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, Kenneth Rogers, personal injury attorney. Kenneth Rogers, like I said, is personal injury attorney in Philadelphia, whose website is LawRogers.com, and he's board certified as a civil trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy in 1999. Board certified in civil pretrial practice advocacy by the National Board of Legal Specialty Certification in 2012. Recognized as Pennsylvania Super Lawyer by SuperLawyers.com and Philadelphia Magazine. Recognized as a top-rated lawyer in 2013 personal injury by American Lawyer Media and Martindale Hubbell. Kenneth Rogers, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, Bert. How nice to hear from you today, and nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about this. How does an injured person select a personal injury lawyer for their case? I mean, you see all these. Again, nothing wrong with marketing. You see a bunch of guys marketing on TV, but really, who's going to be the best lawyer for me?
Well, Bert, my experience is sort of old-fashioned, but I think that The best thing is if the person who's injured or somebody in their immediate families had experience with an attorney before who treated them fairly and competently, honestly, well, they should give that person a call and talk to them about what their problem is and, you know, whether that attorney can help them. I know in my office, if somebody calls me, and it's not something that I would particularly do, I make sure that they get to the right lawyer, even if it's outside my field, and a family law issue or a corporate issue or a criminal issue. If somebody doesn't have that kind of experience with an attorney, well, then they're looking at people that they don't have a referral to. And in that kind of situation, I think it's the lawyer's experience that the person ought to look at, and the number of cases or the quantity of experience in their area. It is true that we all market, and lawyers can be certified by different certifying agencies and publications, and I think people ought to recognize that sometimes attorneys are board certified by organizations that are recognized by their licensing bureau, and they go through testing and other kind of procedures. Other times, lawyers are elected to a position of recognition by a polling of people that do what they do. So that's what super lawyers is, and that's what Martin Bell Hubbell does. And that's another thing that a potential client might want to consider if they're comparing different lawyers.
Gotcha. All right, well, let's talk about this. What do you think, I'd like to get your take on this, how should someone react to an attorney who solicits a case without being asked? What do you think about this kind of practice?
Well, first, it's pretty much universally against the rules of the professional licensing bureaus for an attorney to solicit a case from a potential client, particularly an injured person, who's not initiated contact with that attorney. So as a general rule, engaging in a relationship with an attorney who at the outset is skirting the rules, that just doesn't seem to be a very careful way to get into the kind of solid, professional, trusting relationship that either an injured person or anybody who's going to be represented by a lawyer should have. And let's face facts here. You know, aggressive lawyers who initiate a lot of client contacts without being asked first are usually lawyers that have pretty limited options to otherwise get lawyers for their office. Either their prior clients have had bad experiences with them, or they don't have the means of attracting cases in other ways. You know that, as a general rule, attorneys are not supposed to advertise previous cases or huge results that they claim to have gotten. Usually the people that set up the rules of professional responsibility say that doing that for people sets unreasonable expectations. People seem to think that if somebody else's case was worth that kind of money, their cases would too. And that's not quite a correct way to do it. And at any rate, if I have clients in the past, they have a right of confidentiality in what happened in their case. Without an absolute release, I shouldn't be talking about it. So I think that the client should either go on referral or carefully compare lawyers that have experience in their field.
Absolutely. You know what, and let me ask you this, because as a marketer, I don't quite get that rule. Why are lawyers forbidden from contacting a prospective injured party and saying, hey, you know, my name is Bert, I'm a lawyer, I've experienced this personal injury, let me give you my card? Why is that not allowed in your profession? Because it seems like it wouldn't necessarily harm anybody.
Well, now that's a very good point. And, you know, I've been in practice for 37 years. When I started, lawyers were not allowed to market or advertise. Now, there's a difference between marketing and soliciting. Now, marketing would be where I have a website and I have different types of advertising which tell people generally about what I do and what my experience is and what my certification is. That's a little bit different than finding out that someone died and showing up at their door
under some kind of pretense to solicit their business. So we're talking about solicitation being against the rules, not marketing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Well, listen, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to cut our interview a little bit short, and what I'd like to do is bring it back another time. We've had some glitches on the show today that have kind of put me behind schedule. So I want to thank you so much for stopping by, Kenneth. And, again, I'll set it up through Amy, and we'll have you back another time.
Well, Bert, I'm so glad to hear that, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Take care, and thank
you
very much.
You bet. Guys, great stuff there by Kenneth Rogers on how the legal profession works. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then Neil Patel is going to be on the show talking about this thing called Google Plus. Should your business be using Google Plus right after this commercial?
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. My next guest, Neil Patel. Neil Patel was brought to my attention because some of the biggest companies in the world seek out Neil for his advice. Neil Patel is the co-founder of Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics. He helps companies like Amazon, NBC, GM, HP, and Viacom grow their revenue. That's right. They go to him to have him help them grow their revenue. I don't know if you understand, all the companies I just read are multi-billion dollar companies. That's kind of a big deal. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal calls him a top influencer on the web, and Entrepreneur Magazine says he is one of the top entrepreneurs in the world. He was recognized as a top 100 entrepreneur under the age of 30 by President Obama and a top 50 business influencer by Dun & Bradstreet. Neil has also been awarded the Congressional Recognition. Neil Patel, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Hey, and just to let you know, I appreciate you taking time to come out and visit with us again, but we've been having all sorts of weird technical difficulties, so if, by chance, something goes bad, we'll have to just reschedule when these guys straighten out the tech issues. But anyway, I'm excited to have you back on the show, and we're talking about this thing Google Plus. So what is Google Plus and why should we even use it?
Sure. So Google Plus is Google's version of Facebook. And as you already know, Google's one of the most popular sites on the web, right? So
yes,
they want to make, and Facebook is becoming a very large company, right? They're worth, what, over, was it $50 billion or $100 billion? Either way, they're large. So what Google's trying to do is take some of their market share, and they're creating
right.
Google Plus. They have created Google Plus. Now, what a lot of companies know is valuable in Google, and this is where they make the majority of their revenue. It's not cell phones. It's not any of that kind of stuff. It's still ads, right? You go
right.
on Google,
right.
you do a search, you click on an ad, they make money. Every time you click on an ad, they make money. The beautiful part about Google Plus, what Google's done is they said, hey, we're now going to take social signals into account. So if you do well on Facebook, Twitter, you can rank higher. And everyone knows the value of ranking well on Google because the majority of the traffic goes to the free section. They also threw
right.
in there that, hey, we're also adding in Google Plus in this, in which if you do well on Google Plus, you will rank better. So as a business, you have no choice but to be on Google+. Whether it's popular or not popular, it doesn't matter. Because they say that social signals impact rankings, and Google+ is one of those social signals, and due to the fact that they own that data, right, so they can get access to more data from Google+ than they could from Facebook or Twitter due to the fact that they own Google+. And due to all of this, you have to be on there if you want to dominate the search ranking.
So let me ask you this.
based on your know-how and your experience, if a company is not utilizing, let's say, Facebook or Twitter or one of the other social medias, so you're telling me that their rankings are going to drop, maybe substantially?
Not necessarily drop, but you could be higher if you're on the site.
Gotcha.
And the percentage of how much higher, we don't know, right? They're not going to reveal their algorithms to us. But they did tell us it does. Social signals do impact ranking. It's one of their many little tick boxes. So they may have a list of a few hundred algorithmic requirements, right, that determines how high a site ranks. And one of those tick boxes would be social signals, like Facebook likes, Twitter retweets, you know, how many votes do you have on Google Plus, all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. Well, let me ask you this. Let's talk about customers. How do you get to learn who your visitors really are, what it is they really want, what makes them tick? Walk me through this.
Yeah, so when you're trying to learn who your customers are, what they want, you can look at two things. One is analytics. You can look at Google Analytics or Kissmetrics or any one of those solutions to try to understand more of your customers. Another thing that you're going to have to do, and this is what most people don't do, right, because these analytics tell you where your customers are coming from. Kissmetrics actually identifies a person behind it, an identity, so it can show you, like, hey, John just bought a toothbrush from your site. And they can tell you John first came from the mobile web, then he came from Google Plus, then he came from Google.com, and then he eventually bought. So he came back three times before he bought. But to really understand your customers, you have to use both quantitative and qualitative data, in which one side is just the numbers, which most businesses are doing. The other side, which most businesses forget, is the surveying. So using tools like Qualaroo or SurveyMonkey, you can understand more about your customers, what they like, don't like, why they're not buying, or why they're not coming back and continually repurchasing, or, you know, abandoning their carts, whatever it may be. You're not going to find out a lot of this data unless you survey your customers.
I love it. So as far as surveys go, would you do a survey once every 6 months, every 30 days? How often would somebody do a survey?
It should be a constant thing, kind of like how you brush your teeth every day or twice a day. You want to continually survey. It's something that you don't necessarily stop. And when you do a survey, you don't just survey all of your customers. It has to be very targeted. So if people are leaving your checkout process and you have an e-commerce store, you could be running a survey on your e-commerce store to get more data. After you're done with that survey, you may end up finding out, hey, people are confused on a return page and they don't know how to return, like make returns. So then you, after you're done with the checkout page, you could do the return page, right? So you would do this throughout your whole site.
Gotcha. No, I love that. That makes so much more sense. All right, well, let me ask you this. What's one simple way you can convert visitors into customers?
Sure. One of the simplest ways you can convert visitors into customers is through copywriting, right? And a simple trick that a lot of people forget, although this is common, is using the social elements, so social proof. Sometimes it's logos, right? So like when you read my intro of me, you use logos. You talked about the companies that have helped. That helps with social proof. Another form is trust logos, like verified by McAfee or HackerSafe, right? So it makes you feel safe. Another form of this is testimonial. And not just a testimonial like saying, Neil's an awesome person, but instead something that's detailed. Neil helped provide us a 3x increase in our online revenue. And then you put the company name, the person who sent the testimonial, and their title, right? That would be a detailed testimonial. Another way could be case studies. So you outline specifically, here's the problem, here's the solution, here's the experience, and here's all that happened because of your company's product or service. Those are all examples of trust elements that you can use throughout, you know, your copywriting on your page. But that's one way you can convert visitors into customers.
You know, I love that. I love that because there's so many websites that don't have any of those elements, and
And I think that's a fabulous way to get people to trust you a little bit more and possibly convert. Let me ask you this. If your visitors aren't converting into customers, what's your take? What should you do?
If visitors aren't converting into customers, you should first start surveying them. Find out why they're not buying, what issues they have with your website. And that's the first step that most people forget. And they try to run A-B tests and try to improve their conversion rate. Well, if you don't understand why people aren't converting in the first place, you won't know what tests to run to improve your conversion. The other aspect on why most people don't know how to convert their visitors is because they may not have enough visitors. If you have 500 people coming to your site in a given month, you're like, I made no sales. Well, you only had 500 people. A lot of times, it takes thousands and thousands of visitors before you make your first sale. And that helps you understand what people like, dislike, what you need to change and tweak, so forth and so on. But you either need to survey them first to understand why. If you don't have enough survey responses, the main reason why you're probably not converting people is you just don't have enough visitors.
Right. So bottom line, if you did a survey, and by the way, let me ask you this. If I put out a survey, would I say, hey, Neil, why didn't you buy? Would it be that blatant, or are you, would you kind of make it more
fun? Yeah. No. You could just be really upfront, blunt, to the point, and you'll be shocked on how many people will tell you. Like, we've done that, and people are like, if you reduce your prices, I'll buy. And you get a ton of people who say, if you reduce your prices. Or some people will be like, I didn't buy because I don't understand what you're offering. And when you get a lot of people saying that, that means that you did a poor job explaining what product or service you're offering.
I love it. All right, so you know, A, it could be you're not driving enough traffic. B, I love the whole survey thing because talk about really getting that deep. That, to me, is a brilliant yet simple thing. And what's amazing to me is sometimes it's not about being complicated, is it, Neil? Sometimes it's just doing simple stuff that yields huge results.
Yep, as Leonardo da Vinci once said, right? Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication.
All right, so let me ask you this. We're going to be kind of short on time. As you mentioned earlier, split testing is a great way to test different elements on your site to boost conversion. What software is great for doing this? Well, what have you found that's pretty good for this?
There's two out there right now. Google Analytics has a section called Google Experiments in which you can run split tests through there. It's free. If you want to spend money and you want something that's more user-friendly, you can try Optimizely, which I believe starts at like $20, $30 a month, which isn't too expensive.
I love it. All right, Neil, so you mentioned your own company, Kissmetrics. What I'd love to do is maybe have you come back another time. Let's talk about Tricks and how, you know, people can use it to gather some of this information, because it sounds to me that a lot of us simply don't know what to do with the information that we have. I mean, I bet you there's tons of listeners right now that just don't know what to do with this data. And maybe we can bring you back and we can talk about Kissmetrics and how it could be helpful to get somebody to convert some of their visitors.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Neil Patel, thank you so much for stopping by. Guys, if you have a question about anything you heard Neil talk about, check him out at Neil Patel. That's NEILPATEL.com. Neil Patel, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Guys, that wraps it up. Great stuff there by Neil Patel and all our guests. As always, we thank you so much for visiting with us, and we'll absolutely...
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.